The Academy of Esports podcast is brought to you by LeagueSpot. LeagueSpot, your brand, your league, your way.
Welcome to the Academy of Esports with James O'Hagan. He's on fire. Boom shakalaka.
Welcome to the Academy of Esports podcast. I am your host, James O'Hagan. The Academy of Esports is powered by LeagueSpot. LeagueSpot, your brand, your league, your way. And today I get the pleasure of hanging out with Melissa Burns. She is the founder of Esports Canada, not Canada Esports, Esports Canada. Melissa, thank you for being a guest in the Academy of Esports podcast today.
Well, thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
And you have quite the resume. I want to read through this for everybody just so they can hear what pleasure I get to be graced by your presence. National award-winning educator and international speaker. Well, beyond the United States, right?
You've spoken. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. More than US.
Yeah. Within the field of esports, Melissa is the founder and chair of Esports Canada, a federally registered non-for-profit that supports the growth and development of the Canadian esports ecosystem and national associate member of the International Esports Federation. Actively involved in esports advocacy and research, she is a guest lecturer at Canadian post-secondary institutions on the topic of game-based learning in schools and published a chapter for the textbook Esports Research and Its Integrations in Education. She currently works at Louis Riel School Division's school and classroom support team specialized in integrating arts and technology through the exploration of progressive pedagogical strategies. She serves as the chair of the Manitoba School Esports Association, and her commitment to gender equity has driven her work in supporting and implementing programs that provide opportunities for female and marginalized students to gain visibility, tech sector, STEM career exposure, and skill development. Melissa, that is a heck of a resume.
Well, I mean, it is a lot of fancy words just to kind of summarize some of the stuff I do, but I'm busy.
you are. And to let the audience know, Melissa, I think Melissa put me off for like several months. So it's totally fine because she's so busy.
I tried. I'm so sorry.
No, I get it. I'm the same way too. You get busy, especially again.
Yeah.
You're an educator. Working in a classroom and also running an association of this, and not just a state, like in the United States, we have the state ones. You're not running a territory or a province. You're running a national organization as well, too. So, but we need to get to know you a little bit better, and we're going to ask you some of the fun questions that help get us to where we know you a little better. All right, okay. Melissa, what is a game, and it doesn't have to be a video game, that stands out as having been important to you at some point in your life? Why was that experience meaningful?
So I was thinking about this and I was trying to come up with like a really good non-video game, but I've been a gamer my whole life. And while there are definitely a lot of different games, different even sports that have been really significant to me over my life, the one that stands out as being probably the most significant is actually League of Legends. And the reason I say League of Legends is that I experienced a lot of life changes through my like 12 years of playing League of Legends. And like, to give you some context,
12 years.
When I was 10 years, maybe 10 years.
No, I don't
know,
just,
the game's that old.
I didn't realize you've been that long of a player.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So back when I was in university, no, it would be pretty close to 12 years at this point.
Well, I wasn't questioning the 12 years. I'm just amazed at the commitment to League of Legends.
Well, and see, that's where the story comes in. So when I was in university, I played League of Legends with my friends. And after I graduated, I actually didn't end up going into education right away. I went into performance. I have a degree in opera, which there are not very many jobs doing that in North America. So I ended up switching into musical theater because I did have background in dance and acting as well. And I did that professionally for many years. And I would play League of Legends because this was back before Netflix was around. So if you wanted to like watch something with your friends back home, you would torrent a video. I didn't say that. but you, and you'd hope you both got the same version, because otherwise you'd get the jokes at this different times because the playback would be a different speed. Mm. So that's how old I am. But you could play League of Legends. So I would play League of Legends, and the person who I played with the most is now my husband. And so we would play League of Legends while I was touring. And then after one of my tours, I was back for like, I don't know, maybe a month before heading back out on the road again, and he proposed. And so then we ended up playing League of Legends while I was transitioning into my career as a teacher, going off of the stage and into the classroom, different kind of stage. And then as we grew together, we continued to play. We did like the pick'ems and the fantasy drafts for LCS. And so it, like, it was all part of our life that way. We would play in clash tournaments. And then it became significant again when we had our son, our oldest son, who I won't get into all the details of it, but it had a lot of medical complications. And it was something that we could do as a release while we were away from family in a different province, going through a lot of surgeries. And now that my son is stable, he's doing quite well. He's seven, and we play Pokemon Unite together, which is a very similar game. And it's really fun to kind of see how that's transitioned with us through all these different stages of life.
Well, and what I love is I have two follow-up questions. Number one, well, not a follow-up, one follow-up question, one statement. You are the second guest on the Academy of Esports to who in that question made mention that they met their spouse playing a game. And that the other one was Dr. Kelly Dunlap. She and her husband met while playing Halo together in college. Mm. So that was theirs. But I have to ask, too, did you have any League of Legends themes to your wedding?
No, but there was definitely, and there still is, a lot of League of Legends in our home, in our like office space where we have our like rigs all set up and everything. So it definitely has played a significant aesthetic aspect of our lives.
Wonderful. And next question, maybe it's totally eccentric or maybe it's quite traditional, but what is your superpower? What is that thing that you do better than most people, or what do you wish you could do?
So I had to think about this one a lot because I really was struggling to come up with an answer. And I even tried to listen to other episodes to see like, what did other people say? I have no idea how to answer this question. And I think mine is like twofold in that it could, depending on how I use it, can either be a superpower or a kryptonite. Mm. And it's that I get bored really, really easily. And so I need to be doing things that are dynamic, that require a lot of decision making, that require action, that change a lot. And that's been very much characteristic of my careers as I've grown as well, having done stuff in marketing and having done stuff in musical theater and doing even different jobs within education. I have to always be learning, doing something different, but that also makes me really efficient. So that's, yeah, kind of my answer. All right.
Efficiency is your power. Sure. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Now, this one probably, you probably were able to nail this one. You probably didn't have to think about it. Being an opera major. Now, alto, soprano, what?
Soprano.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Name one song whenever it hits your speakers, you're going to sing along to.
So this is a weird one. I generally don't sing a lot unless I'm being paid to sing.
That, you know what? That makes sense. That makes all like the sense in the world.
It's not an ego thing. It's just, I will sing a lot. And it's also become even more compounded by the fact that both of my children, anytime I try to sing at home, they say, "Mommy, stop singing. You're too loud."
I've heard from other people too, who do certain things as a profession that some of us just do for fun. And they just go, "No, I'm not going to do that anymore. Once I'm off the clock, I am off the clock. I can't,
Well, it's just like video games. Like, we go into this because we love video games, but then we're so in it that we don't have time to play video games as often anymore. It's the same kind of thing.
I haven't ever gotten out of the tutorial in League of Legends. I'm ashamed to say. But well, I will support
you down and we'll play sometime.
Well, I will support everybody who wants to play League of Legends or whatever game it is. So I get that.
Well, maybe soft start. We'll get you into Pokemon Unite.
Well, okay. But what is that? What is that song? If you do,
it depends on my mood and what's playing. Okay. Cause I will sing to pretty much anything. If I have to pick, if Elton John is on, I will always sing Elton John anything.
I will try to sing Elton John if Elton John is on. I will do my best that I can with Elton John. All right. Now, again, this kind of leads us into the main discussion. What is one thing about your field that surprises people when they first hear about it? Now, again, when I met you, not physically, but connected online, were a music teacher who was very interested in connecting into esports and scholastic gaming. And I found that to be really interesting. In fact, I believe, didn't I see a video of you with playing the xylophones with some of your students, some of the League of Legends music? Was that it?
Yeah. And we did an entire concert where I transcribed all the songs from Ocarina of Time from the Zelda series. And we did all of the Ocarina of Time songs that you'd play. And we did those all on the Orff instruments. Yeah.
Okay. So let's get into maybe that. I'm sure some people are probably surprised by that, but let's talk about what surprises people when they first hear about what it is that you do.
I hate to play into the stereotype, but it's always the girl in esports is usually a first observation, or they assume that I got into it for some other reason, but I don't actually play. So that's usually surprising that I do actually play and I enjoy playing games. I think that most of the time folks are surprised by the breadth of the work that I've been building because of the very humble beginnings of my program. Having started, to give some background as to how it has gotten to where it is, I had started in 2016 as a teacher I found myself in a K-8 music program. I had never taught early years before. I was a high school specialist.
What part of Canada are you in?
I'm in Winnipeg.
Okay.
So right in like the very middle of the
home
country.
Of the Jets, just over the border from Minnesota. Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
I've seen the Moose play too. The Manitoba Moose. I have minor league hockey tickets.
Okay. So. That, you know what? That wins a lot of brownie points for me. So I'm impressed.
Are you a Blue Bombers fan though?
Of course. Of course. Okay. Down with Saskatchewan. There's a massive rivalry.
Hold on. First of all, let's talk about that. They're Green Bay colors. So we can't, the green and the yellow. No, sorry.
No.
All right. Sorry. Sorry. Now back to all the amazing things that you do. Sorry for the
right. So moment. No, that's okay. But I knew that in feeling like a little bit of a fish out of water, finding myself in like a K-8 space, I didn't really know how to fit in. And one of the challenges of teaching music in those kinds of spaces that as an educator, you know, that relationships are foundational to any sort of authentic learning environment. And as a music teacher, I had 30 minutes, three times a cycle with my students, which is not enough time to actually build meaningful relationships. So the first thing I wanted to do, this is right in September, right after I'd been hired, I wanted to be able to connect with the students. And I saw that there was a really active music program that I was taking on. So I knew that there was a segment that I would connect with in extracurricular music. And there was lots of different kinds of crafting clubs and there were lots of sports teams, but there was nothing for the gamers. And so I went to the principal and I said, can I start an esports club? And they were like, I don't know what that is, but if you can find the gear, go for it. And so I and I was brand new, like nobody knew me. I sent an all call email out to the full staff and said, hey, does anybody have any extra video game consoles kicking around that they don't need? And one of our teachers had won. Wedding socials are like a big tradition in Manitoba. Okay. So when you get married, you throw this big like social, and then there's like prizes, like auction, silent auction prizes that you can get and stuff like that. And it's to raise money for the wedding. It's a Manitoba thing. And so they had won. I know all these weird cultural nuances.
No, I love it. I love it.
So this teacher had won a Nintendo Wii or a Wii U, I should say, at this wedding social, and she didn't need it. And so she's like, well, you can have it. So I took that, and I knew that there were some small scale LAN tournaments that were happening with the high schools in the area. And I asked if we could compete in some of the high school tournaments, even though my kids are in grade 7 and 8, and they said yes. And so, I took a very serious approach because I like winning. I took a very serious approach with these students, and I said, look, you're never going to beat them based on technical skill because they just have more hours in these games than you do. And that's not something you can really make up for at this point just because of the age difference. But what you can do is learn how to play a really strong defensive game and then capitalize when they make a mistake and take advantage of that and then go straight back to defense. And they ended up winning. And everybody was shocked. Wow. They had no idea because there were some like all-star grade 12 students, but they were not taken seriously because here you have this like little ragtag group of grade 7, 8 kids coming from a low socioeconomic school. They don't even have devices at home to play on. And they stomped it. And it was amazing. And it built so much confidence in that group of students that I started to not only build these relationships with them, I started to see how it was developing their confidence and their soft skills and a bunch of global competencies. I started to extend some of the learning we were doing and getting them to do optional assignments like doing character analysis and like looking for like pick your main, tell me about what stages they're best on, why they're best on them, who do they counter, if someone picks this, what do you do to counter that, what is their skill set, how do you best optimize. And these kids were coming back who like they're not academically strong kids. That just they've got so much going on in their home lives that they have enough to deal with, and they were coming back like 2 days later with 6-page documents full of like rich information and analysis. And I was like, this is learning. This is curricular learning right here. And I wanted to be able to build on that. And so then I started developing curriculum and resources that I wanted to share. And so that became a provincial esport, a school esport association. And then in that started to grow in my mind because I was like, well, we're not limited by physical location like you are with a physical sport, a traditional sport. So let's expand this and see what we can get going across the country. And so I started reaching out to educators across the country and seeing who I could find. There wasn't a lot happening. And in January of 2020, I started Esport Canada, which was just an education program. Right. It was January. We didn't know what was coming yet. And it was for Canadian students by Canadian educators. And I didn't realize how significant that was going to be until we got into the pandemic, because during the pandemic, we saw a huge influx of American for-profit companies that were coming into Canadian school systems and pitching an untapped market with all these promises of engagement and bringing kids together during a pandemic. And it all sounded really great and shiny. But there was a lot of data literacy that was missing from those conversations. And that was something that I really wanted to make sure that was fundamental to the work that we were doing.
When you say data literacy, I'm sorry, when you say data literacy, yeah. what can you please just for the audience, help them understand what that means when you say that?
Misconceptions around how student accounts and information is being handled and what
so
it's
student
being
data privacy.
For. Yeah. And regulations in Canada are very different than they are in the United States. And so that in itself added a layer to the conversation. And there was just a lot of misinformation and not fully informed teachers. It had nothing to do with IT or anything like that, because once we got back into schools and we're playing from schools, then IT was getting more involved in those conversations and we're seeing what was happening. But when we were all playing from home, that's a totally different kettle of fish. And so we were able to really connect and develop awareness amongst educators, and it became about capacity building. So something that we wanted to do was give local teachers the skills and the tools that they needed to be successful, to provide curricular learning and skill development, transferable skill development to their students through esports that was specific to the needs of their province. And so something that we do at Esport Canada is we go and we help develop those programs provincially. So we've kind of taken a different approach to from what I've seen kind of developed in the United States, where we started as just Canada. And now that there are enough folks doing it, now we're able to actually establish, like, Manitoba has a school organization for Manitoba. Ontario has one for Ontario. And we're currently activating in BC, Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Nova Scotia. So all of those provinces are going to have locally run and operated, independent, not-for-profit, school-run organizations to support students in a scholastic setting. And so then they are able to get all of their support and whatever they need from Esport Canada. And we are able to iterate together as a collective of educators in that space and really grow and develop what we want to see for esports in schools in Canada. And so that's where it kind of all started. And to make things even crazier was that about a year ago, we were approached by a few different levels of government and some industry folks. And they said, we really like what you're doing. And Canada would really like to be able to be better represented internationally. And right now there's no one that's representing Canada in some of these competitions. Would you expand your offering to have an opportunity for amateur to professional players to compete to represent Canada in the international stage? So this is not students anymore. This is 18 plus. And so I brought it to my board, which is all educators. And we had a really lengthy discussion, multiple discussions over a few months about it, and decided that it made a lot of sense because it provided another opportunity for our students to see where their passions and interests could take them. But it also gave more credibility to the work that we were doing, because it still can be a hard sell for some folks and for some administrators who need that tangible experience to really understand what it is that we're doing and the validity of what we're doing. And so we agreed to do that and started to work with industry on that. And then independent from that, before we had released anything to the public, we were approached by a number of colleges and universities across the country a month after that conversation had happened. They said, we really like what you're doing. Would you be willing to have another branch of your organization for post-secondary varsity and be the home of collegiate and university esports in Canada? And we're like, that's a no-brainer, because now our kids have a pathway straight through. No matter what their interests are and what they want to do, it's all here. And we are all working towards this same shared vision of supporting Canadian industry, Canadian ecosystem, Canadian students, and really putting people first in all that we do, and really being able to dig into those roots. So we've been able to grow slowly, but with a lot of intention and a lot of dedication. And it's been supported by the industry, because everybody in our organization works completely pro bono. Like, we have a law firm that works with us full time pro bono, because they believe in the vision of what we're doing.
Now, so I think you might be my first Canadian. No, well, I mean, Dr. Cowart, but she's American born. But for those in America who may be listening to this, you know, we are much more segmented on 50 states. Canada, to my understanding, and Melissa, please correct me if I'm wrong, there's a little bit more. You've got provinces and territories. So, you know, But it's interesting. I heard Nova Scotia, which I know they speak their own language. But then you have Quebec and Quebecois. Mm-hmm. And it is, I believe it's law in Canada, is it not, that all offerings have to be in both French and English. Is that correct? So and I noticed that you did not bring up Quebec as a province that you're currently working with.
Yeah.
But talk to me about that, having to not just talk about different languages, but we're also talking about First Nation, which has a prominent place in Canadian culture as well. People in the United States may say Native Americans. Okay. First Nation is a protected group in Canada. Talk about how you've developed within those very different cultures as well, too, perhaps.
Yeah. Quebec was actually my first partner in all of this. And the reason that I left them out from that particular statement is just that for strategic reasons, the Quebec Federation, which is by far the oldest and the most established in the country, has decided that they don't want to join Eastport Canada in an official capacity until we get national recognition, like from the Minister of Sport. And so until then, they're strategically choosing to not be officially with us, but they are still with us. So for example, director.
Oh, wait. I'm just laughing because that is so Quebec. That is like the most Quebec. I'm not putting you in a bad spot. I'm saying this, but knowing what I know, cousins who live in Montreal and such, that is the most Quebec thing I think I've heard in a long time. So please go on.
Well, one of my dearest friends is in Quebec, and he's our director of education, actually. So even sitting board member, he is Quebecois, or I guess not Quebecois. That's a specific political party. I don't know what his political affiliations are, and I wouldn't share that on here anyway.
That's okay.
But we do provide resources in French for our French colleagues. And it is obviously something that we continually have to work on. I myself am not a French speaker, so that is a weakness for me. That's something that I am aware of. But that's why I surround myself with incredible supporters who are Francophone to bring that perspective. And the way that I've always approached, because I know you also mentioned the Indigenous people of Canada, and the way that I personally approach diversity, equity, and inclusion, it's very important to me, just like on a personal level. I find bringing DEI into everything I do to be very important and significant. It's never tokenism for me. It's not a box to check. The way that I approach it, and I've had this conversation a few times recently, where I see it as my vision for this organization is to bring the best to Canadians. And Canadians don't all look like me. And I know that from my positionality and from my perspective, I see this, which means I have tons and tons of blind spots where I am not going to be able to authentically serve those communities the way that they need to be served. And so it is my responsibility to surround myself with people of diverse backgrounds, of diverse perspectives, to fill in those blind spots for me so that collectively we can be better. And it's not for any one reason, except that it makes it a better experience for all. Like as an educator, we teach educators how to use universal design for learning, not because it checks a box, but because what is good for some is necessary for others. And you don't lose anything by taking that opportunity to share that perspective. And so that's the way that I've even our entire board and executive have written the constitution for our organization, is with an emphasis on diversity for that reason, because it makes us stronger and it allows us to provide a better experience for everybody. But those who really need it benefit immensely.
That I think, Melissa, what you just did was you put DEI in a beautiful descriptor for everybody, as well as talking about that it starts with the organization. It starts with not rushing to implement, but being purposeful in what it is that we are doing here. And maybe this gets into some of the biggest questions, the challenges that we see sometimes in esports and gaming and Scholastic gaming, are that everybody who is so excited, they want to do everything. And then all of a sudden they look around and they go, why is our culture like this? Why is it not, you know, as robust, or the program not as big or as good? Well, you didn't plan for it to be. You didn't plan for it to be a diverse organization. You just planned to play video games. There's so much more to this, and I see that as a huge challenge. What's a challenge that you see in the work that you're doing outside of, I wouldn't say DEI is a challenge so much as something you're facing head on, but what's a challenge that you're seeing right now? If it is DEI, I think you're doing a great job of starting to handle it and address it.
I think maybe not specific to Esport Canada, but just the culture of gaming in general, is that it is as incredible as it is, and we know that everyone's interfacing with it. I know the numbers in the United States are even higher than the statistics coming out of Canada. And I think that might actually have to do with some of the methodology of the research that's being done here, that our numbers are reading a little bit lower than I think they should be. But it's that it is still a toxic environment. And we see that reflected at the top levels, because when we look at the professional scene and we see the lack of representation for gender, and we see the lack of representation for BIPOC gamers coming out of North America specifically. And we look at the toxicity towards the African American or African Canadian populations and the Indigenous populations in Canada. There's a lot of work to be done. And the comments that the approach that I've always taken when talking to administrators, because the issue is never comes with parents. I find that students love gaming, they're already doing it. I've never had a parent complain. Ever. They always say, I wish I had this when I was a kid. It's boomer administrators that have issues. but they're worried about the toxicity, and we do see that reflected at the top levels, but we don't change the culture of gaming by targeting the adults, because it starts so much younger than that. And that's the reason that it needs to be brought into schools. And I would say not even just as an extracurricular that's optional for the students that want to engage with it. It needs to be something that is part of curriculum that all of our students are interfacing with. Because it's, from my experience with my own students, a lot of them don't even recognize it. It's so natural. The vocabulary is so ingrained in the culture that they don't even see it for what it is. And they don't think about it. And it is so passively built into the experience that it becomes an unsafe space for BIPOC gamers, for gender nonconforming gamers, for female gamers, that we're not seeing them develop to their fullest potential. And by all accounts, we should have a very wide representation at the professional level. And so we need to be intentional with our instruction, not just from it. It's so much more than just playing games. This is life. And our students are expressing that they are having just as many real life experiences in online spaces as they are in physical spaces. So there's been a paradigm shift. And until the decision makers start to wrap their heads around that concept, it becomes really challenging to address some of these systemic issues, because they are systemic issues at this point. It is part of the system. And so we need to have these conversations earlier, start the training earlier to affect change.
I agree with you in that, thinking through what you said about, you know, having this be part of program, changing the culture. I know when I started our program and even this podcast, the Academy of Esports, one of the key pillars is to redefine athletic culture. And very quickly, I realized it's not just athletic culture that needs to change, but it's gaming culture. And I think what you bring up about administrators who want to bury their head in the sand and not address you know, the amazing intrinsic motivational value of gaming and just say, well, gaming has no place in our schools. That's the same aspect that they and attitude that they took with social media, right? So go back 10, 15 years when social media was kind of just getting started, students were getting into it. It was seen as more of a nuisance and a distraction and something that had no place in school. And unfortunately, what do we have now? We have a bunch of 20 and 30 year olds who were raised in a Lord of the Flies experience, who never were given boundaries or anything on how to develop their social media presence. Same thing in gaming has happened with that. And I love hearing that Esports Canada as a national program has that as a core pillar of their own beliefs of saying, hey, we need to do this to help correct some of the flaws that are in the system, the lack of diversity that goes in the system. I love hearing about that. What about when you hear people talking about the epidemic of mental health challenges? I know that that is also something that a lot of us in Scholastic Gaming have faced head on in various ways. What does that mean to you personally and professionally, or as through the lens of Esports Canada?
I think it comes back to that education piece again, where it's our opportunity to model and outline and highlight for students what healthy, balanced gaming looks like. I know we've gotten past the stereotype of the kid sitting in his basement eating Cheetos and drinking Red Bull. We've gotten past that for the most part. But there is still a culture of unhealthy habits that does seem to persist. And we know what kind of impact, especially the piece that really sticks out to me as an educator, is the sleep piece. And knowing how significant sleep is to our students' ability to regulate and the impact, the compound impact that has on their social interactions. Because when they're not getting regular and restful sleep, they're not able to make the decisions that help them be successful in social situations, which then result in all these different impacts on their social behavior and overall well-being. And so we need to model for them, because we ourselves are gamers, model for them what does healthy gaming look like? What does balanced living look like? Because anything that you do can be taken to a point where it is no longer healthy. And unfortunately, with something like social media or video games, because it is so brilliantly crafted to play into human psychology that makes it quite addictive, we have to be even that much more intentional about creating boundaries for ourselves that allow us to have those safeguards and keep our well-being, our overall well-being in check. And I think that that's something that's really significant about bringing esports into schools, is that it really allows us to teach the whole child. It really allows us to be very holistic in our approach towards their economic, their social, their citizenship, their personal and interpersonal well-being. All of those things converge with esports because of the way that it's built.
And I just you did use the A word, addictive. To the listeners, I argue against the addictiveness of games. I talk more about the intrinsic motivation of games, not to say that addiction doesn't exist, but I want to say that most times it's kids are just more motivated to want to play these games because they do have a sense of autonomy, a sense of community, and they have a sense of relatedness to what it is they're playing. So, Melissa, I'm not saying to browbeat you.
No. And I would actually argue that the reason that I chose that specific word is because they're designed intentionally to, just like TikTok. TikTok is a brilliant design in that gives you a 15-second dopamine hit. Your brain wants more of that. And so then you go back for it. And so unless you are creating boundaries, they're just like any other addiction. Some people will be more prone to it than others, but it is designed to give you that not only that ongoing and consistent feedback, but it's also giving you that reward system built in because it keeps you coming back for more. So there are addictive qualities built into games, That doesn't mean that games are addictive and that everybody who plays games is going to become addicted, but there are intentional addictive design put into the games themselves. And that's not in any sort of nefarious way, like to undermine humanity. That's just basic human psychology and smart.
Well, and I know that the EU went so far as to ban loot boxes, again, because it plays to that micro, I don't want to get into the micro betting stuff, but that to me is just like, that is the worst of the worst.
That's a different podcast.
That's a totally different podcast with different psychology. Yeah. But
I'm not ready for that one today.
But you did bring up the dopamine hits. And the problem with repetitive dopamine hits is there's other chemicals of the brain too that need attention.
Absolutely.
And again, dopamine hit on top of dopamine hit just leads to numbness. It's like eating so much pizza that you're like, oh my God, I don't want pizza anymore.
Oh, but I will say that there's a really cool study that was just published in October. I'm sure you've already read it, but they were doing a study on the impact of students, not only in a few different like sensory tests, but they actually looked at the physiological impact of gaming. So they took, I think it was over 2,000 students, and they were either non-gamers, like they don't play games at all, which I'm still a little bit questionable about.
Really? Where did they find that 3% of the population?
So I didn't read that, like dig into that part of it, but I was like, that seems odd. But and then the other half were heavy gamers. They play at least 3 hours a day. And they tested them on so memory recall, like the short-term memory recall and inhibition, and they are inhibitors. And it was really like you had all the regular predictors that came out in favor of the gamers. But the interesting piece of that study was that it had a physiological impact where the students that were gamers when going through those tests had a higher oxygen count in their blood than those who were non-gamers.
Which is super fascinating. I will have to find that study or you could, because I don't think I've read
it. I'll send it to you.
Please do. Please do.
So fascinating. Yeah.
All right. Now. I'm laughing only because this next question falls into kind of what we were just talking about, but it's about your balance between running a national organization, being a teacher leader, a mother, a wife, a League of Legends 12-year player. So I'm sure you make platinum like all the time.
No, not at all.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty terrible.
And also reading really fascinating studies. How do you find the balance? How do you find that balance between your online and your offline life?
I'm really good at scheduling. Going back to that
superpower
comment. That superpower, definitely. I never like to be bored, so I'm constantly doing things. But I always prioritize sleep. When I'm with my kids, I am with my kids. And I always prioritize physical movement every day. I work out every single day. And those are the non-negotiables for me. Time with my family, time in the gym, and sleep. As long as I get those, everything else works itself out.
Fantastic. Well, as we are getting to the end here, just a couple of thoughts. Is there anything I didn't ask you or something that you want to promote? I think you've done an excellent job of talking about Esports Canada. What's next for Esports Canada, I guess?
Well, we have a really exciting MOU that was announced a few weeks ago with Australia. So
Memorandum of Understanding, everybody. Sorry.
Sorry. So we're going to be working with Australia on some really neat initiatives, not only in the AmPro space, but also with education specifically, and looking at developing some different kinds of curriculum exchanges and learning exchanges between educators from both countries, and also hopefully for our students as well. So there's lots of exciting development there. We've got some really cool initiatives that are in the works that I can't talk about yet, but with our Indigenous communities to really give them the stage that they deserve and a place to really be highlighted in positive ways for the incredible work that they're doing. We've got some really phenomenal content creators here in Canada. And so we're getting finding more opportunities for them to be highlighted and showcased. And also, what else is there? Oh, we've got national qualifiers coming up. So we've got this coming week, we've got national qualifiers for Tekken and CSGO, CSGO Women's, and Dota 2. And the winners of those go to regionals and then hopefully off to Romania for Worlds. So lots of big things. Yeah.
And Romania is a place it's on my bucket list of visiting. I should just, I don't know, I'll just go and watch.
Well, you could come this August and then you can meet me IRL and check out some cool esports.
me and Kurt Melcher have this thing as well too, where we literally live about an hour apart from each other, but until recently we had never met face to face in like driving from our houses to actually meet. We had met at conferences and places everywhere else. You are just north of Minnesota. I am in Wisconsin, which is connected to Minnesota. To fly over
to the Dells.
But to fly to Bucharest to meet a Canadian, that would take the cake. Melissa Burns, the founder and chair of Esports Canada. Thank you for being a guest on the Academy of Esports podcast today.
Thanks for having me.
That will do it for this week on the Academy of Esports. I've been your host, James O'Hagan. Esports are organized competitive video games, allowing schools to redefine their athletic culture, diversify opportunities for student participation, promote good physical and mental health, increase collegiate scholarship pathways, and play games. We can never forget the importance of play. The mission of the Academy of Esports is to support these ideals. The vision of the Academy of Esports is for all students to experience the fun and joy of playing competitive video games. You may follow me on Twitter at Jim O'Hagan. That's at JimOHagan. And through the Academy of Esports account at TAO Esports. It's a great way to get the latest blog posts, podcast episodes, and news coming out of esports and education. And remember, you can continue your engagement by going to www.taoesports.com. You can also connect through Facebook at www.facebook.com/taoesports. Thanks again for listening, and I look forward to our time again next week.